Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. We had a great week while I was gone, so I'm back to talk about some Tottenham Hotspur. Are you guys excited?
Yay.
Okay, yeah. No, some pretty shitty stuff happened while I was away in Marrakesh, and Spurs kind of lost to Southampton 2-1. It sort of sucked, but let's go around and... meet the panel. So first up, we have a guy who's getting a little big for his britches. We got Brian Ashlock, who apparently thinks he can take my job, huh, Brian?
I would have done a pretty seamless job of handling it without you if you had remembered to send me the theme song.
Well, maybe if you had earned that or deserved it, you would have gotten it. But
maybe. Or maybe if you weren't so damn lazy, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, okay. See if you get the theme song next time, bitch. Next up, we have coming to us live from Brooklyn, it's Robbie Schatz. Rob, how's it going?
Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's all New York's Brooklyn now, right?
Lower Manhattan?
Lower Manhattan, yeah, there you go. North Manhattan, coming to us live from Manhattan.
We're so glad to have you back, Greg.
I know. And finally, we have my sidekick, we have Ben Daniels. Ben, how's it going? Did you miss me last week?
I mean, I just didn't laugh at somebody else's jokes. So,
okay.
a bit of the same.
Yeah, Rob is real glad you're back.
I can see about these seamless transitions I was hearing about as we were getting ready to record.
We have to no-sell someone's terrible bits, and in your absence... Rob bravely stepped up to fill that void.
It was real interesting. They did it too because had a poor show. So, I mean, I appreciate him taking the initiative like that. That's important for new podcast members to do.
Well, we got to haze everybody somehow. So,
we just got to respect that seamless integration. he just hits the ground running. You don't always get that with a new signing.
You don't.
Ben is just such a good worker. He just took me by the hand.
That's right. Solidarity, baby.
It's like we're on Mastodon. No
transitions at all out of any of that?
Yeah, let's talk about that shitty game that we had this week.
Into a warm bath.
Let's talk about that shitty game that we had this week. We lost Southampton 2-1. What the fuck? How'd that happen, guys? Rob, you wanna start us out? How did we go from a dominant first half to that shit show in the second half?
I don't know. I turned it off at halftime. Everything's going really well.
Great.
Apparently, we turned it off at halftime too. So, I don't know. Two ways to look at it. One is a lot of our good players are back and half fit. And at the same time, all the players who were covering for all those really good players who were injured got totally run into the ground. So everybody kind of ran out of gas at the exact same time. Meantime, Southampton's manager looked at his first half and said, wow, we were fucking garbage. Made a couple of changes. Made a couple subs, changed the formation a little bit, started pressing. Suddenly, they were playing a lot better, and we totally collapsed. Go figure.
Brian, you watch this shit show, was it? I mean, is this just a product of Southampton changed their game and we didn't have anything to counter it with? I mean, I understand we're dealing with injuries and guys who are half fit, but that seems... I don't know, that doesn't seem... Southampton's a pretty shitty team. I feel like we should have something in our locker to deal with this.
You know, I don't know. I think it's a product of a number of things. I think, you know, first and foremost, having Pochettino in the stands as opposed to on the sidelines seems to have hindered us. But, I mean,
because if he was on the sideline, he would have made proactive substitutions.
Yeah, absolutely. We would have definitely made a different substitution other than Ben Davies in the 80-something minute. Spurs have struggled all season with teams that make halftime changes. Arsenal did it to us early in the year, and Southampton did it to us again by bringing on some, I don't know, teenage or 20-something winger who'd been on loan at Reading and not playing, and he fucked us up, man. And it was, I don't know. I think a lot of this is down to fitness, and like we said on the podcast last week, lots of the guys played a lot of minutes over the last 2 weeks. I think Christian Eriksen played every minute of every match, and some people just didn't have the legs to go 90. It was nice to have Dele Alli back, but you know, he started being second to the ball at about the 55th minute. We didn't pull him off until after the second goal. It was poor management. It was tired legs. It was taking our foot off the gas. It was a whole host of factors, and it just wound up equaling like our fourth or fifth dumb loss to a dumb and bad team on the season.
But I feel like this wasn't losing to United, though, where, like, just a few dumb things happened and United just got lucky enough. I mean, this was sustained shit.
Yeah, I mean, the second half, their expected goals was, like, almost 2 to our, what was it, 0.2? I mean, we got our asses handed to us. The second half expected goals was 1.9 for Southampton and 0.6 for Spurs, which is more than just... You know, they got lucky on a couple chances. I mean, it sounds like they handily whipped our ass. In the first half, which I managed to watch before I had to leave, the return of Dele Alli clearly made a huge difference to how we were playing. We looked proactive and incisive and creative and dynamic. Kind of haven't looked in a lot of our games lately. And, you know, it sounds like as soon as he ran out of gas, the whole team kind of collapsed with him. If you have a guy returning from injury who is only half fit, like, you need to be prepared for that and be able to manage around it. And it sounds like we just really didn't.
Well, I mean, that there should be a planned sub. Like, you know, regardless of how well or how poorly Dele Alli is playing, we should have been prepared to haul him off at 60 minutes. Or 55 or 62 or whatever. Like, he shouldn't have been out there for the two goals. Not that he was directly at fault for either of them, or anything like that. But, you know, getting somebody fresh into midfield maybe would have helped us get, you know, a little bit of a foothold on the game. But pretty much everybody was gassed. Sissoko was gassed. Dele was gassed. Eriksen was gassed. It was not good.
Yeah, so, but I mean, you know, and you look at those guys, you know, how much has Sissoko played and how much has he run every game? You know, Eric Dyer's just back from injury. You know,
Kyle Walker-Peterson.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. How bad was Kyle Walker-Peterson?
I mean, you look at Walker-Peterson, and I mean, there was a lot of argument about this on Twitter, a lot of it surrounding Windy, who I think a lot of people went after because he's such a advocate for our youth players and Walker Peters in particular. But, you know, the argument goes one of two ways in that, A, Walker Peters, the simple argument is Walker Peters sucks and he's not good enough for Spurs and get him out of there. The flip side is Spurs aren't giving this guy enough time, so how can you expect him to perform when he plays so irregularly? While I am sympathetic to the fact that maybe Spurs haven't handled his development, you know, as well as we could have, at the same time, like, if you're not capable of putting in a better performance than this against Southampton, like, lots of bench time or not, like, I'm just not sure you're good enough for us, man. Like,
Are you forgetting his man of the match performance at Barcelona?
Yes, I am. I mean, I just you throw out a turd like this, and it's like, you know, if the argument is you need more bench time, I feel, or more playing time, I feel like a game like this does not bolster, you know, your cause.
I think there's merits to both sides of this argument, though. I think both sides can be right. Like, obviously, Spurs have probably hugely mismanaged his development. You know, he probably should have been going on loan two seasons ago, and he probably should have been playing in the championship regularly, or, you know, League One, or whatever we had interest in. Like, there was no reason for him to have, especially in the last couple seasons, to been, you know, the third right back at the club, or to have been occasionally on the bench, and then to even less occasionally play. Like, there was just no need for it. And I think, you know, youth is best served by playing minutes, competitive minutes, whether that's in the championship or the Premier League or whatever, that's what was better for him. And so we screwed that up. Now, by the same token, he's also bad. And, you know, we screwed up by thinking that he was capable of playing in this game and playing at that position. Certainly we have other players on the team that can play right back, that could have played right back in this game, and we didn't utilize them because we believe in Walker Peters for whatever reason. But I mean, he also just did not play well. Like, he was at fault for both the goals. Redmond beat him like a drum in the second half. Like, it wasn't good.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about a guy like Kyle Walker Peters is I will accept that for sure we've mismanaged his development. But the fact is given that, you know, he hasn't developed clearly over the last couple of years to the point where we can't rely on him to play, you know, a match here and there as regularly as he has, which, you know, that's a big ask for a young player to come in and play without playing time. But that's the role that we've designated him for, you know, and it's clearly not something he's suited to. You know, either he needs real game time so he can get better and then he can come back and be a valuable contributor, or he's not good enough. But, you know, the role we have designated him for is playing very occasionally without any real minutes, and he can't do it, clearly.
And if he can't do it against this team, I mean, that's what's so concerning to me, is like, you know, you come off the bench, this happens to you against, like, City, or even, like, I don't know, like Leicester or someone. Like, you know, that's one thing, but it's like Redmond's going to beat you like a drum all day. I mean, I know he's not the worst player in the world, but Jesus, like, you got to do better than this, minutes or not.
And I mean, it's interesting because there's a very obvious comparison for Walker Peters. You've got at Crystal Palace, you've got Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who is the same age as Walker Peters, and who played, you know, pretty sparingly last season. I think he probably played you know, less than 10 games total for Crystal Palace. And then this year he's turned into a great player. You know, he's
arguably the best right back in the league this season.
Right. So. And if you look at his career, he hasn't had any loan moves or anything, but what he's done is he has seized the opportunity that's been given to him when he was afforded playing time and forced his manager to play him. And now, look, I get that the situation with Palace's squad is different. He doesn't have, you know, an Ivory Coast international and England's one true son, Kieran Trippier, in front of him. Okay, whatever. But, you know, he was putting in performances at the end of last year to show why he deserved to be in the first team, and I don't think we've ever really gotten that on any sort of consistent basis from Walker Peters. I think he started early games in the season both of the last 2 years, and he's been, like, fine in those games. He probably won man of the match in both of them, and so I'm misremembering, but I mean, I never saw anything from him where I was like, oh, wow, this guy needs to be playing. He needs to be our first choice right back. It was more everybody else was so bad that I was like, well, we might as well play him.
Right, and I think, again, that goes back to how we've handled his development. Either last season when he puts in a man-of-the-match, you know, deserved or undeserved, performance against Newcastle opening day of this season, you either trust him and give him a shot and let him get a run of games, or you say he's not ready and you get him out on loan somewhere he can develop. And we did neither of those things. So he's just wallowing and isn't useful. Which is a shame because he could have been.
He's played 194 league minutes this season. I don't know what you can tell about him.
I mean, on top of that, you're talking about what? Like two or three domestic cup games and a smattering of minutes in the Champions League?
He's played 61 minutes in the Champions League. He's made one appearance in the League Cup and two appearances in the FA Cup. So he's played a total of 255 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, look, maybe we're being harsh on him for one bad performance. I don't know. I don't think he's good enough for Spurs. I've never thought that he was good enough for Spurs. But, like Ben has said, like I've been saying, he needs to at least play. And we have no incentive to play him at Spurs. Management obviously has no incentive to play him. There's, you know, they're not going to at this point. They would rather play Trippier or Aurier. So we should be sending him somewhere that has an incentive to play him. Someone that wants a right back, someone that needs him, someone that will, at the very least, help increase his value as opposed to just leaving him to fester on the bench. Like, it just, I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's very bad.
He does have three assists, though. Is that more than Mesut Ozil? I'm not sure.
Maybe not anymore. I mean, let's talk about a positive player. Or let's focus on a positive. I mean, Dele Alli looked real good for that first half. I mean, maybe the first half is just take it on like sort of a level in my brain because of how bad the second half was. But I thought we looked real slick, and it all seemed to be running through Dele. Ben, did you think Dele looked up to snuff at first, or do you think
he looked great? He looked like everything we'd been missing in midfield, you know, and linking midfield to attack. He's just developed into such a good, well-rounded player. He does so many things well. He defends well. He presses well. He passes well. He makes smart runs. He has good vision. I mean, he's just a very complete player. And, you know, with the midfield that we've had all season of, you know, various square pegs and round holes, he's kind of always been the guy that when he's fit, he's made everything tick. And, you know, even though it collapsed on itself halfway through the game, I'm really excited for what the run-in's going to look like with Dele Alli, because he gives us a lot of options, him and Eric Dier. And, you know, possibly even a return of Wanyama means we can finally, you know, just sort of take control of games in a way that we haven't been able to in the last few months. And I think we've been desperately missing it. So, yeah, I'm super happy he's back.
Well, I think it's worth remembering with Dele gone. I mean, you know, Spurs transfer business in the offseason is existent, if existed, period. You know, we'd be able to do some things that might mitigate the loss of a player like Dele Alli, but there's nothing we can do about, you know, he just gives us so much that I don't think any other player on our team could really, you know, maybe Eriksen, even though I think Eriksen plays in a different way, but it's just so hard to replace.
Well, the thing about Eriksen is that, you know, without Dele Alli and without a midfield really behind him, Eriksen kind of has been kind of lost playing in between the lines, trying to drop deep and trying to facilitate. And you know, it's been a big ask for him. And a lot of people have been very frustrated by Eriksen's performances because he hasn't really, you know, taken over games and, you know, put his stamp on things the way we wanted from a star player like that when the chips are down. But, I mean, the thing is Eriksen's been doing a lot of thankless work to try and get this team running. And I think bringing Dele Alli back into the team alongside him frees up Eriksen to do the things that, you know, we know Eriksen does so well also. You know, it gives him a little more freedom to be influential in the final third. From him lately.
So do you attribute what happened in the second half just to Eriksson running out of gas? Rob, Brian?
I mean, not just Eriksson, everybody. Like,
yeah, everyone ran out of gas at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, you had a midfield that was second to every ball, that, you know, wasn't closing down on Southampton's pass. You had two wingers of marginal skill level. Redmond's all right, but, you know, you had the kid on the other side who were just having their way with both fullbacks. I mean, it was just everybody. It was a total just lack of energy. And I think also, you know, like Pochettino said after the match, I think it was a little bit, you know, our mentality that we kind of took our foot off the gas, that we were arrogant, that we, you know, thought one goal was enough.
Or we just didn't think Southampton could pressure us, which is clearly, they should have been disabused of that very quickly in the second half, but apparently not.
Yeah.
If it had been reversed and they had started the game pressing us, and then, well, I guess it would have worked. They would have stopped. They wouldn't have stopped. But it's funny that it took them 45 minutes to realize, oh, if we put some pressure on them, we'll be getting a lot of turnovers, a lot closer to their goal.
Well, I guess the worry,
as soon as they started doing that, like, they were creating chances left and right, whereas they didn't have their first shot on target until, I think, right about the end of the first half.
Well, the worry for a team like Southampton is if you pressure Spurs are going to break through your press and start creating chances. But, you know, you're down a goal, Spurs are all over you, fuck it. Your defensive strategy's not working, might as well try something else. But speaking of managerial changes, let's talk about, Rob, look at, how much was Pochettino's touch land by in? How much of an effect do you think that actually had on this match? Because he was in touch with Jesus Perez, like, he was able to give a halftime talk and a pregame talk. About the only thing he wasn't able to do was sit on the sidelines and directly communicate with the team.
He was on his cell phone the whole time.
He was. No, he was. So it's not like he was separated from the team. It's the only thing he was able to do was personally yell at them, which, you know, I could perceive having some level of an effect. But I guess that's my question. Do you think Pochettino's touchline man had an effect on this game?
I mean, I'm sure it had some effect. But as far as I can tell from the way that he normally behaves on the sideline during a game, he's not doing a ton of moving players around and making tactical shifts as the game goes along, the way somebody like Pep Guardiola does. So, you know, if he could do the pregame talk and the halftime talk, and he would spend the rest of the time sitting on the bench anyway, I'm not sure it really made a ton of difference.
Brian, do you think it had an effect?
I mean, I think it does. I think only in the sort of minds of maybe the players, you know, in that you don't have Pochettino down there yelling at you. Like, is you know, the same sort of motivational figure while you're on the pitch? I don't know. Probably not. But I'm also not a professional athlete, so I don't know how much they're paying attention to the coach, how much is over there yelling at them, trying to get them up, trying to get them focused. Like, I don't know how much that affects them.
See, my understanding is that it's usually Jesus Perez doing the yelling anyway. So maybe the effect is on Jesus Perez being in a different position on the sideline than he would be in a normal game. Because yeah. I think he does a lot of the, like, moving guys around, and Pochettino just sort of sits there and grouses. But I don't know.
I mean, I suspect it's very hard for us to know the
grousing.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is. It's hard. It's probably very hard for us to tell how much of an actual effect Pochettino has. What I do know is, it's kind of a load of bullshit that he's not on the sidelines. Ben, do you want to expand a little bit upon that, about what a load of just horse manure this two-match ban is?
I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, if you read the report from Mike Dean talking about what allegedly happened, I think in his words, all he ever said was "go away," and Pochettino, seemingly like a malfunctioning robot, said "you know what you are" like 47 times to him, which doesn't make any sense. I don't know what Mike Dean is. I don't know what that is even allegedly referring to, but like, you can watch the video happen and clearly see that that's not what anybody said at any point in time. You know, I'm not like a lip reader, but you know, I can tell you that those were not the words that came out of Pochettino's mouth. So, you know, Mike Dean's a filthy liar. Let's just start there. But also, like, you know, Pochettino apologized, which is not required, which, you know, plenty of managers haven't done. You know, we've seen Jose Mourinho act terribly. We've seen Pep lose his shit. We see Klopp lose his shit basically every week. You know, Emery, I guess, crawls back into his coffin at the end of the match, so he doesn't have time to yell at the refs. But, you know, it's like we've seen this from managers before, way more egregiously than what Poch did. And the thing is we know Mike Dean said some shit to set Pochettino off, and Pochettino graciously refused to share that information with the public. And I fucking want to know what it is, because we had never seen him snap like this before, and it had to be something bad.
Well, so, okay, that's what pisses me off, Ben.
Pisses me off then is the FA said we want to make an example of him. Fuck you! Like that? What? What? What is this? We're gonna make an example of him. Kiss my ass.
FA needs to watch some wrestling, learn about kayfabe. Like, you keep that shit to yourself, guys. But that's what I think infuriates me the most about this is, like, okay, you want to make an example out of someone, like, fine. A, like, don't fucking tell anybody that. But B, like, you want to make an example out of someone, maybe make an example out of, like, a serial offender. Maybe make an example out of someone who repeatedly causes problems and you have let off with warnings, like, I don't know, Jurgen Klopp. Like, for some reason, a guy who has had, like, and they even acknowledge this, no run-ins with referees of any note since he came to England. You know, they're going to make an example out of him, but Jurgen Klopp's, like, right, calling refs cheats and shit, and it's like, come right, the Klopp fuck on. Like
Klopp's out there like a fucking overbearing JV soccer dad at, like, a high school game of no significance. Like, every week he's screaming at somebody, losing his shit.
Like, yelling in referees' faces, but somehow Pochettino gets this, because, I don't know, Mike Dean got his fifis hurt. I mean, I don't know. I'm with you, Ben. I would love to know what Mike Dean said, because, like, clearly something set him off. And, you know, my guess is that if you had access to all the materials the Premier League has access to, you probably know exactly what he said. But
right. Well, and it's not just that it set Pochettino off. It set off the entire Spurs coaching staff. It set off Jesus Perez. It set off Tony Jimenez. So, like, it wasn't just, like, Pochettino was pissed and went over to him and started yelling at him. Like, all three of them were over there.
Right. And one thing you can clearly make out from lip reading is Jesus Perez is saying, you can't say that. You can't say that to Mike Dean. Like, he clearly said something. Fuck you.
And the thing is, I can totally believe that coaching staff overreacted to something innocuous. I'm not saying that's what happened, but the fact that the FA report didn't even sort of address this, or if you just read the FA report, you wouldn't have thought anything like that happened. I don't know. I don't want to get into conspiracy theories. I would just like to know what they said, because
I mean, like, as a lawyer, the idea that the only facts and evidence for this sentence is the testimony of one party, and we're just going to let that in, uncontroverted, you know, completely unchallenged.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, this is what happened.
Do we sound like Liverpool fans? Do we sound like Liverpool fans when Suarez was getting in trouble?
But the problem is that Spurs decided not to fight it at all. Like, if Pochettino had, you know, fought the sanctions at all and gave his side of the story, then it wouldn't have been this way. Like, this, it is only this way because Pochettino and Spurs were like, yep, all right, I crossed the line, I shouldn't have done that. And,
well, you know,
publicly expressing remorse and publicly apologizing.
Right. It's just like the FA is, like, for Americans, cooperating with the FA is like cooperating with the NCAA. Like, no good can come of it. So what you have to do 2 is just bunker down, deny, 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 and fight it as much as possible, and then make them, like,
comfort. But see, I don't think that's what's going on. I think
at the end of the day, what are they
going
to do?
Because I think you saw what was going on here, which was this clearly, for whatever reason, got the goat of the FA. Like, they were, for rightly or wrongly, and I think it's wrongly, they were extremely unhappy about this. Maybe it's because it was so public and you could hear him yelling, and because we're not all going to pretend he's a cuddly teddy bear like Jurgen Klopp. But, like, clearly the FA was angry about how this looked. I think Spurs' walk back and apology was they just knew the FA was pissed and they're trying to mitigate consequences down the line, both in terms of Pochettino getting suspended and in terms of, like, my guess is Spurs not getting calls from referees. And I think it was purely about survival or self-preservation on Spurs' part. I don't think it's because they realized Pochettino stepped over a line and they didn't have a lot of room here. I think they knew the FA was just going to make their lives miserable.
What I want to know is the Democrats have had the House for 2 months, and they still haven't used this subpoena power to bring Mike Dean up before Congress and make him testify. I mean, how fucking weak is this party that they can't, you know, do what's right for the people?
Extremely on brand, Ben. Extremely on brand.
Have you tooted that on Mastodon?
I haven't. I haven't tooted in a while. I've slunk back to Twitter like a beaten animal.
We'll just all end up on Facebook Messenger before it's all over.
It was just too positive over there. You know, I need, maybe it's a Spurs fan in me, but I need that cynical misery of seeing Ben Shapiro tweets every day.
Well, I don't know. So,
took a turn.
Essentially, we're not going to have Pochettino for one more match, which sucks because it's Liverpool. Although, I don't know, maybe we'll make subs in time this time. I'm just writing this one up as a loss. So, I think that leads us, speaking of losses, speaking of bad things happening to Spurs, Arsenal won this weekend, and we're, I don't know, Champions League, finishing in third, not looking as rosy as it was a few weeks ago, is it?
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea have a game in hand, and they're 4 points behind us. So if they win, they're only 1 point back. I think it's like three points or something. 4 points separates third from sixth. So this sucks. I mean, in December, we had a 13-point lead on United. So good job, guys.
I mean, we really need to.
Our next game is hard or anything.
I mean, we have two top four teams. Top six teams, I guess, remaining for the rest of the year. Arsenal have
Arsenal
none.
Doesn't have any.
Huh?
Arsenal doesn't have any.
Yeah.
At least, thanks to the stupid stadium, we have more home matches than away matches, which the other teams can't say.
Yeah, the big advantage we have over Arsenal is they play on the road a lot towards the end of the year.
And we theoretically play in a new stadium.
In theory. Spurs look like they're going to go into their new stadium. Does this, as people who will not be attending games in that new stadium this year, does this excite you guys? Are you just glad it's going to be over?
Definitely glad it's going to be over.
Yeah.
This was just the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah. Now we don't have to hear about it anymore.
Until, like,
it'll be something else, but
the cockerel on the roof falls through that perch and that bird's nest and lands in the middle of the field in the middle of a game.
But at least it won't land in a cheese room.
We can dream.
I think we should have kept the cheese room. I'm really upset that it's gone.
You, the true Spurs fans, the true fromage aficionados aren't being serviced.
Yeah, I mean, I think, all right, maybe it's a little bit or middle class or whatever, but, you know, whatever. I like cheese. Like,
Ben, how do you think the cheese room would go over on Mastodon?
Great. They love cheese in Mastodon. All leftists love cheese.
All leftists love cheese, even in cheese rooms?
I mean, look, you know, we'll have to guillotine most of the people in the cheese room and seize the cheese for ourselves. But the existence of the room is not helpful. It's really about who has the access to the cheese and, you know, whether the capital class, at the expense of working class folks, are profiting off of the cheese rubrics.
Seize the means of cheese production.
That's right.
With cows.
I'm less worried about the production of the cheese than the consumption. I think that's what we need to be focused on.
That's right.
I think what we need to focus on is the fact that we don't have any games for a while, so Spurs can't hurt us for at least another 2 weeks. Are we excited to watch which member of Tottenham Hotspur do we think is going to get injured on England duty? I think Dele Alli is the obvious answer, but I think it might be Harry Kane.
Well, the best part is that they called up guys who were already in. So, does Kieran Trippier win?
He's
already hurt.
I might have said that would be a positive before this week, but you know, I think I'd rather see Trippier than having to run out Walker Peters again. So,
I feel like we're due for an Eriksen injury.
True. That's good. Don't Son's got to go to like Mars or something for a few friendlies, so that could always, you know, end in tears.
I thought he was playing them in Korea.
Well, you know.
I mean, that's a pretty long plane ride, but. Dele's gonna get hurt again, right? I mean, that's nailed on.
I mean, on the one hand, it's not awful because if they just play him as a sub for these friendlies, then he gets some match fitness back, and that's good. But
he's gonna play 180 minutes, right?
Yeah, almost definitely. Like if he played, you know, 60 minutes spread across the two friendlies, then that's good and fine, and that's probably actually helpful to Spurs, but. Why would that ever happen?
It wouldn't. So to wrap up, all the teams have qualified for the next round of the Champions League. So I'm just curious, how do you guys feel about playing Liverpool in the next round?
Better than I feel about playing City. I mean, how many did City score the other day? 7 against an actual real opponent. Well, I mean, Schalke, so, you know.
Yeah,
well,
like I was about to say, why don't we calm down on that one?
But, you know, it wasn't Burton Albion or something like that, so, you know.
I mean it kind of was.
I mean, look, they have Nabil Bentaleb, Benji Stambouli, they probably have other players that I've heard of. You know, they're decent-ish.
Bad this year.
Yeah, so. They're real bad. They finished second last year, though. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, but this year they're terrible.
I guess Leon Goretzka was real important. I don't know. I mean, we're definitely drawing one of the English teams.
We discussed this before we started recording. The most on-brand thing would be to get the most favorable draw and fuck that up. So we're looking at Porto, Ajax. I don't know.
I think Porto.
It has to be Porto, right?
I don't know if that's most on brand. I feel like the most on brand would be to draw the English team, get the first leg at home, have a decent showing, and then just get rocked in the away leg.
I mean, it depends because like our Europa League performances have always been, oh, look, we got Benfica. This is manageable, and we fuck it up. But in the Champions League, it's been, like Brian said, where we play Real Madrid decently in the first leg, and then we get slaughtered 4-1 in the next leg. Or, you know, we have a valiant comeback against Juventus, and then we fucking get our asses kicked in the second leg. So, you know, the thing about being a Spurs fan is that the brand is very malleable. All that matters is that we're going to blow it, and, you know, the brand sort of, it's like liquids in a bowl or, you know, cats. They just take the shape of whatever container you put it in. Whatever happens, it's going to be Spursy because we're going to blow it somehow. And if we don't, we'll blow it the next game or the next game. At some point, we'll blow it. If we win we'll blow it by, you know, crashing out in the group stages next year. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we do. It will always be a Spursy failure. That's the beauty of it.
The universe will end. Heat death. Eat it, Arby's.
I literally can't think of a better way to end it. We'll be back next week where I think we're going to look back into the history of Spurs. We're going to see exactly what that is, but We should be back next week, and
not like the real history, just like the recent history that we all remember.
Yeah, exactly, because like we weren't here in the '60s when Spurs actually won things. So yeah, we'll talk about something that you know, throw it into the Wayback Machine. Spurs have a Legends match to you know, kick off the new stadium. Maybe we'll dive into some of the players from that a little bit. I don't know. Why don't you tune in next week to see? Hopefully it'll be more pleasant than talking about that fucking Southampton game. Brian, any last words for the listeners?
Nope, but you can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock and on Tumblr at Brett Rainbow.
Rob, any last words for the listeners?
You can find me Googling photos of Dimitar Berbatov smoking in exotic locales at Rena Wallabout on Twitter.
And Benjamin?
You can find me reenacting Dimitar Berbatov smoking cigarettes in exotic locales on Twitter at Comrade You Spurs.
And you can find me having unclean thoughts about Dimitar Berbatov smoking in exotic locales on Twitter at SkipJack0079. Yeah, so for Ben, for Brian, for Rob, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.